morning, 7:08 on WCCO. I'm Laura Oakes. Thank you for joining us. Mostly sunny, 57 degrees. I guarantee you there are plenty of people polishing their chrome at the Back to the 50s car show right about now, kicking off a beautiful day for a beautiful event there in St. Paul. Also in St. Paul is our friend Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive. We're taking your car care questions this morning, so let's get going. Phone calls or texts, same number, 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. Good morning, Nick. How you doing?
Good morning. Doing well.
Great. Beautiful day. What's on your plan today?
Well, we got a little bit of yard work to do, as we all do. Mm-hmm. It's all the rain. We have a lot of sticks and stuff everywhere. But I think my youngest Silas and I might make it out to Back to the 50s.
Good.
The weather looks perfect today, so I think it might be something to do for the afternoon.
Yep, and I'm going to give you a pro tip since we both live in St. Paul. If you're going later in the day, parking will be a hassle. If you can bring yourself to take the bus on Snelling, it is a great way to go. Just drive up to Snelling, jump on the bus, you're there in 10 minutes. Easy peasy.
That's a good advice.
Yeah. All righty. So if you have a question for Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, give us a call or a text, 651-461-9226. We have a texter, Nick, who says, how often should brake caliper slide pins be inspected and, if necessary, be re-lubricated on Honda vehicles? What do you think?
It's a good question. It's a process typically that we do upon replacing of the brake pads or doing brake services. If we're seeing something prematurely, some abnormal wear, but the pads are not worn out, that might be a situation where you'd take those calipers apart, clean and re-lube them. But typically it's upon replacement of the brake pads themselves.
Alrighty. 2020 Toyota RAV4, the battery keeps draining. When the vehicle is turned off, is there something that can cause the battery to lose its charge?
There's a lot of things. It could be the battery itself, depending on the actual age of the battery. It's a 2020, so if it's an original battery, it might have ran its life cycle. However, there's a lot of computers, a lot of electronics, a lot of things that can stay on without us realizing it. You know, years ago, if you left the headlights on, well, it was pretty obvious. Well, now there's a lot of things behind the scenes that are running that can wear a battery down. So typically in those situations, we're going to get our meter out. We're going to check each different circuit to try to determine which circuit or which fuse that drain is associated with. From that, we're going to find the items through a schematic on that circuit and start dissecting it. So you hit the easy button, you take all the big, easy to access things first, eliminate those, and then you kind of fine tune it as you continue to test to figure out which circuit, which component, what part of that circuit has the drain on it. Then there you can kind of come up with a game plan for repair.
We talked a little bit about this last week, Nick, but it's just amazing to me how computerized everything is in our cars these days. We have come a long way since the Back to the 50s cars, haven't we?
we certainly have, which makes Back to the 50s pretty unique. You know, if you're somewhat interested in cars, you go out there and you get to see the technology and these folks that have maintained that technology. You know, a lot of those cars are 100 years old. You know, I mean, it's pretty spectacular. So, no, you're right. As in all of our lives, but cars especially, you know, with a lot of the sensors of protection, you know, safety's taking the forefront on vehicles, whether it's cameras or airbags surrounding you in your vehicle. I think that the manufacturers and engineers have done a wonderful job keeping us safe.
Yeah, and I have to say that with some of that camera business and the newer things that, you know, years ago we never had or never had to learn, it's pretty easy to learn how to use them. Like, at first I was kind of intimidated by a backup camera, but now I use it every single time I get in the car. And so they must know what they're doing in terms of dumbing it down for regular people.
I think they have. But you're right. It's parallel parking with these cameras is a heck of a lot easier than it used to be.
I wonder if you can use them in your driver's test.
I don't know. I don't know if that's if it's allowed or not. But like I'm saying, you know, we're right on Grand, and so we're parallel parking cars every day, all day long, and we're pretty good at it. But I can tell you, having those cameras, you can kind of squeeze a car into a spot that you probably would not have been able to before.
Yeah, for sure. We are talking with Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, taking your car-related questions. Give us a call, 651-461-9226. We'd love to chat with you this morning. Or go the easy route, send us a text. It's the same number, 651-461-9226. Nick, we have another texter with a 2007 GMC Envoy. Why would the headlights just go off at times? It doesn't happen often, but enough to be very unpredictable. Why would that be happening?
Kind of with that earlier comment about electronics, there could be a bad ground, a bad connection. You know, it's not a fuse, because if a fuse were to go out, they don't come back without replacement. So people always, oh, check the fuses. It's a good test. But in this situation where it comes and goes, it's not the fuse. I'm thinking something more along the connection or the switch itself. Once again, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to pull out that wiring diagram. We're going to isolate that circuit, maybe even highlight it. We're going to check the ground, check the power, and start going through that circuit to determine where the source of the issue is. Maybe it's a matter of something that's loosening, it's tightening, something's corroded, or some sort of replacement.
All righty. A 2012 F-150, the wheels squeaked terribly when backing up, not when going forward. They were squeaking before a brake job and thought that would solve it, but it's still happening. Any ideas?
That's strange. Maybe something related to the parking brake. Obviously, I like to use the record player analogy. You know, if things are rotating, the needles touching the records can make some noise. Same thing, it doesn't take much of a contact point to create noise. Depending on the severity, the frequency, it can be quite annoying. So I would say take it back, share with them, go for the test drive, maybe go for a ride with them. Try to duplicate that noise so the shop or mechanic can hear that. And hopefully upon that, they can kind of isolate which corner of the vehicle, get the stethoscope out, and just kind of do some more trial and error and try to find the source of that, and then, you know, remedy that, whether it's a matter of just lubricating, adjusting. But, you know, those noises can be very, very frustrating and sometimes very hard to find. So just be patient with them and definitely give them as much information as you can. The more information the shop has, the easier it is for them to find the problem.
Yeah. How do you know when to get a strange noise checked out and when it's probably no big deal?
Well, I always say people are like, oh, I was making this noise. I was just ignoring it. Well, you shouldn't do that because something's not happy. And what's even worse is I was making a noise for quite some time. Now it's gone. That might be that whatever was wearing is now worn out. You know, it could be a wheel bearing. It could be something that could give you trouble and leave you stranded. So I would say if you hear a noise, not that it's an emergency, but when you're in for service, mention it, document it. I always say this, document as much information as you can share. You need to drive it down an alleyway. You need to drive it on the interstate. It only does it when I'm speeding up, slowing down. All those types of pieces of information really help us try to figure out what's going on. So the more information you can share with us, the easier it is to find the problem, and therefore it's easier for you to figure out what's going on.
Great. Let's go to a caller. We have Mike on the line from Minneapolis. Mike, what's your question for Nick?
Morning, Nick. See, I've got a 2007 Nissan Xterra, 162,000 miles, and just suddenly in the last week, it started to really idle low down to about 500 RPM and starts to shake and shudder whenever I'm at a stop. When the transmission is in drive, but I've got my foot on the brake at a stoplight, but it doesn't seem to do it when I'm in park. Any ideas where I should start looking?
Well, I would be first curious about like the throttle body. If the throttle body is kind of the butterfly going back to carburetors that allows the air into the intake, into the engine, that ring or area of that flap can get dirty, carboned up. If there's too much of that, it'll restrict the airflow, which, you know, the car's computer is designed to have some assumptions. It assumes that at a certain angle, there's a certain amount of air, it needs at a certain amount of fuel. Situations where things get dirty, the car can't see that. The computer doesn't know that. So therefore, something's different that's coming in, and it can confuse the vehicle. If the check engine light is on, there's a good clue there because there's a fault code that kind of sets you down a path. But I would start taking something related to the idle speed, a cleaning, adjustment, get some data, get a scan tool connected, try to read the data, figure out what's going on. Mass airflow sensor might be dirty. There's a few different things that might not be horribly expensive or difficult, but a good start. And this is another good point is when you start noticing something like this, boy, it's now idling really low. We don't want the situation where the car doesn't run. So I would tell you, you know, shops are very busy summer months now. Get on somebody's schedule in the next couple of weeks, have that assessed and figure out what's going on.
All right. Thank you for the call, Mike. It is 717 on WCCO. We're chatting with Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Nick knows what he's talking about. He started at Lloyd's sweeping floors many, many moons ago. Now he owns the place, and he's answering all of your car care questions. 651-461-9226. You can call us like Mike did. You can send a text to that very same number. We have Nick for about 25 more minutes, and we do need to take a break now. So let's get those texts and calls coming. It's 718 on WCCO. Good morning. Thanks for waking up with us. It's 7:21 on WCCO Radio. I'm Laura Oakes. Mostly sunny right now. 58 degrees. Nothing but sunshine today. Heading for a high of 74. Great day to get out and take advantage of some of the wonderful events going on around the Twin Cities and much of greater Minnesota as well today. You're listening to Car Care with our friend Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. We're taking your calls and questions about what's going on with your car, 651-461-9226. Back to the text line, Nick. Here is somebody with a 2011 Buick Lucerne. The cooling fan cycles off and on every minute or so. This seems to start even before the engine is up to normal operating temperature. It always maintains normal temperature while driving. So wondering what's going on there.
That's a good question. I would suspect that there's a sensor, a temperature sensor that's not reading accurately. So the computer's picking that up and seeing, you know, an incorrect reading and thinking it's hotter than it is. It's also possible that a lot of times those cooling fans do come on when the compressor comes on. So if you have defrost or the air on, even if it's on low, doesn't matter if it's turned on at all, the fan's going to cycle. So I would say, that's another thing, too, that it's not an emergency. You don't have to run out today and have it assessed, but get on somebody's schedule here because the last thing you want is that fan not to operate, have the car overheat, or have the air conditioning not work as things heat up. So I would say that that's an important enough of an issue to get on somebody's schedule to at least figure out what's going on. Once you know what's going on, you can make the decision about the repair, but at least get an assessment to make sure you know what's happening there.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Here is a text question, Nick, from somebody who has recognized that I have had the good fortune of growing up around car people and mechanics and people with some expertise, which is great. Doesn't mean I have it, but I know who to ask when I do have a problem. She is saying, wondering what recommendations do you have for a young woman who is not surrounded by knowledgeable people, car knowledgeable people in their life? What is the best way for somebody to, I don't know, keep up with their maintenance or make sure they're taking their care of their car properly or know where to turn when something is up? What would you say?
Well, the first thing I would say is most people, like a vast majority, just don't know anymore. And it's not the fault of many people. Cars have evolved so much. This is what we do every day and all day, and we get stumped. So don't be afraid. Don't be embarrassed. The first and foremost, the biggest thing you can do is when you have those conversations, tell the truth, share all the information. As silly as it might seem to you, sharing it, it can be a critical piece of information that can help us figure out what's going on. So the willingness and ability to share all the information. As far as maintenance goes, there's a lot of stuff online. I would advise you to follow things put up by the manufacturer because there's a lot of opinions online, as we know, too. So when it comes to your vehicle, you find that maintenance schedule. A lot of newer vehicles, you can find the actual manual online, or there's an app where you can download it and try to follow it the best you can. Keep in mind that those maintenance schedules are a guide. Sometimes in our climate, you know, especially in winter months, some of the things might vary a little bit, but at least it's a path to follow as far as it goes with your car and the schedules and the timeline of things. And then as far as, you know, another piece too is where do I take my car? Who do I ask? Start with your neighbors, your coworkers, your family, people in your community. There is a shop in every neighborhood or every town that's reputable. They do good work. They're honest people. You just got to seek them out, build that relationship, build that trust back and forth. And then at that point, you should have the confidence and no worries that when you take your car in, when they're sharing something or telling you something, you have a better understanding and a better way to work through whatever problems might arrive.
For sure. Those maintenance schedules can be very helpful. But at the same time, Nick, are there some things that you think everybody should be able to do themselves, like check their oil, check their tire pressure, that kind of thing?
Well, we talked about that last week. There's cars out there that don't have dipsticks. There's sensors that read the oil
level.
Which is good and bad, right? It's good because our lives have gotten so busy. Same with the tire sensors. Most or all vehicles are equipped with some sort of tire pressure monitoring. Some of the more advanced ones tell you the actual pressures of each tire. Those things are great. They're pretty reliable. Obviously, if you're of my vintage or if you're in the industry like I am, you're kind of skeptical about some of it, but it's been proven. It's been tested. I would say you can follow it. You know, the biggest thing you can do, and this might seem a little bit silly, but when you're getting gas, walk around your car, look at all four tires. If one looks lower than the others, that's an obvious thing. Open the hood and just observe. You don't have to go and do anything, but if something looks funny, ask a question. You know, I mean, like, the best thing people can do is be advocates for them and their vehicles versus ignoring them. Like I said earlier, we're all so busy. We run from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, assuming that we hop in the vehicle and turn the key or push the button, it's going to work. Well, that vehicle needs a little bit of TLC too. So keep that in mind when you're scheduling out your summer, June, July, August, especially if you're planning on a road trip at some point. Get on 70 schedule now because they're busy, I promise you that. And you want to have that car at least, you know, a little more than kicking the tires, per se, before you hit that road trip or head to the cabin.
Great. Good question from Marty in Minneapolis on our text line. He has a 2012 Ford Fusion with 160,000 miles. He says he just spent $1,900 on a variety of maintenance items. Is there a general rule of thumb regarding when to stop paying for repairs and get another car? What do you think?
It really depends on the vehicle. And if it's maintenance, I'm always going to say do the maintenance. If the car's in good working order, it'll keep going. You know, I don't, you know, it used to be like, well, you hit 100,000 miles, 200,000 miles, I get an estimate for $1,000. And as we know with the world and the cost of things, $1,000 is a lot of money. But there's a lot of work that gets done for that also. So I usually would say if it's a repair and it's significant, an engine, transmission, there's some other underlying issues with the vehicle that might be a time to consider a new vehicle. But, you know, to be totally honest, I think the biggest point is we work hard for our money. If we think we're ready for a new vehicle and it's in our budget, it's within our means, and you want it, you should go do it. Don't feel that you're obligated to keep this vehicle till it's whatever. You know, you could trade it in and get some return on that value there. But there isn't necessarily like once you hit a certain mileage or certain price point, you need to replace the car. It's going to be case by case. If you maintain your vehicle and you've done a good job of that, you're going to find that you keep your car a lot longer. You know, 10, 15 years is not out of line. 400,000 miles isn't out of line. So it really depends on the individual and the car itself.
Yep, we did that. We ran a couple of Toyota Camrys into the ground with many, many, many miles when we were saving money and putting a kid through college. So nothing wrong with that at all. All right, another texter, Nick. Why would all-wheel drive be more necessary than front-wheel drive? If one tire needs to be replaced, oftentimes all four need to be replaced, and that is very costly. So what do we think about that?
So what they're referring to is on an all-wheel drive vehicle, which many vehicles are now, that helps us obviously in the winter months, but in any traction situation, drive when the roads are uneasy, it's not wet, slippery, muddy, what have, the all-wheel drive kind of helps us keep the car on the road and heading forward. They're referring to replacing the tires. So tires have a diameter, with, you know, the certain tread depth when they're new, and as they wear, that tread depth decreases because they're wearing out. If you get tires that are decently worn and you have a puncture or a failure of one of those tires, oftentimes it's going to be recommended to replace all four. The reason is if you do just the one tire and not the other three, that tire height is a little bit different, which means it's rotated at a different speed. So the taller tire is moving slower than the shorter tires. Wrap your head around that. But it's to the point where it's not like you're, you don't notice anything driving it. However, the drivetrain, all those slipping points, all those bearing points are under more stress because things are not moving at the same speed. Over a period of time, that can definitely create a failure point of a differential, transfer case, some of these clutch packs. So when they're recommending that, it isn't just trying to sell you four tires because they need the business. It's because they're trying to prevent from a failure of a system or a component that would take excessive abuse. You can check them with the owner's manual, with the manufacturer. A lot of them will also state, you know, if the all-wheel drive vehicle, if you have one failure and the tires are still in good working order, you're going to need to replace all four. So that's, and it can be subjective, depends on how worn the tires are, depends on the vehicle. So it's not just a blanket statement, but it's a conversation that needs to be had if you're replacing tires for sure.
Yeah, it is expensive. Sometimes you just need to bite the bullet, unfortunately. It is 7:31 on WCCO. We need to take a break. If you have a car-related question for our expert Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, give us a call or a text, 651-461-9226. Back in a moment. Morning, 7:35 on WCCO. I'm Laura Oakes. You're listening to Car Care with our friend Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, taking your car-related questions either by text or phone call. We'd love to hear from you. 651-461-9226. And Nick, we have Beverly on the line. Beverly, what's your question for Nick this morning?
Yes. Due to an injury, I have my garage car that I have not started or rode in for since December. What should I do?
Well, make sure that you're up and ready to drive. If not, get a neighbor, family member. I don't think it's a bad idea to have somebody take it for a good drive, you know, get it on the highway, kind of stretch its legs, per se. Make sure the fluids are full. You know, maybe they take it to the grocery store or something like that. But, you know, if you're not in any condition to drive, I think you should wait till you're healed up. But like I said, I would ask a neighbor, a family member, a friend, to maybe take the car for a little spin to kind of work the bugs out a little bit.
Great. Good advice, Nick. Yep, Beverly, don't rush it for sure. We do have a quick question on the text line. Nick, an oil change shop did not reinstall the plastic splash shield under the engine in my 2008 VW Jetta. Is it important to replace it, or can I drive the car without that splash shield?
That's a good question. It happens often, and it's really going to depend on the shield and the way it's set up. Sometimes there's multiple shields underneath. They do a variety of things. They help with noise. They help with airflow, keeping things cooled down. And also in the winter months, they keep from snow and such getting up into areas where they shouldn't be. So I would say next time you're in for service, you know, this is not a huge priority, but have them take a look at that. Get an idea what it costs. Especially vehicles that have gotten a little bit older. We see a lot of, you know, from curbs and potholes and such, that those shields take a lot of abuse. They're plastic, so they can fatigue and crack. So there are some situations where we do remove them ourselves and don't replace them. But it's really going to depend on the placement of it. So I would say next time you're in, have them take a look at it. Get the advice of the experts on what you need to do there.
And Nick, we might have touched on this last week, but what would you recommend for people when they do take their car in for an oil change? Can you go to the quick places without a problem? Should they take it to the dealer? Does it matter? What do you think about that?
Well, what's most important is that you're getting the service done. Obviously, I'd like to see you take it to a place that has certified, trained people, not just changing the oil, but looking at the vehicle. And that car's up in the air. You're not just pulling the drain plug and letting it happen. You're looking at all the other areas, belts, hoses, steering, suspension. You're getting a really good, thorough visual inspection. And that's why we always touch base on having not just oil change done, but having the car inspected, because the oil change is one of the most important maintenance things we can do. But when we're underneath, we can see if things are worn, loose, fatigued, failing, and we can share that with the driver, the owner of the vehicle, so they can be better prepared for what they might be looking at. So in the pinch, getting oil change is most important to answer your question, but it needs to be looked at by a trained professional to make sure your car's in good working order.
Great. If you have a question for Nick, give us a call or a text, 651-461-9226. We have about 7 minutes left with Nick before we're done with him for this Saturday. So get those questions in. Back to the text line, Nick. I have a 2014 Dodge Ram 1500 with a 5.7 engine with 8-speed transmission. The RPM meter does little flutters when I'm around 30 to 50 miles per hour. Every once in a while at the same speed, the truck will slightly shake. Is it a torque converter? How easy is a torque converter replacement process?
Well, it could be something related to the transmission. Torque converter is a component in the transmission. To replace a torque converter, you need to remove the transmission. So it can be labor-intensive and costly. I think we need to take a step back and check the condition of the fluid, check some data points, meaning that there's different shift points that you can read that information with a scan tool in the computer, try to figure out exactly what's happening, We can even take our scan tool on our test drive and record that data. So while you're focusing on the road, which you should be, the computer's collecting all this information, we get back to the shop and we can read that information to try to figure out, is there something with the torque converter? Is there a solenoid? Is line pressure getting low? There's different things that we're going to look for. And hopefully one of those things is a good clue to tell you what's going on. And hopefully it's just a matter of a little bit of maintenance. Maybe you need some fresh fluid in there to get things working the way they should be.
I have a question for you, Nick. With so much reliance now that you guys have on computers and diagnostics and just how the technology has changed and grown so rapidly over the years, what are your thoughts on the trade schools and the tech schools that are training our mechanics these days? Are they plugged into, they must be plugged in to all of this tech and being able to teach these kids how to use it, right?
They absolutely are, and yeah. I don't envy their challenges, because oftentimes we really want the fast, easy, quick answer, but oftentimes when we do our testing or diagnostic, it comes back to the basics, you know, the Ohm's law, which is the way electricity flows, there's hydraulics, you know, all these things are computerized, but the computers are just sensors and solenoids. The mechanics of it is still happening. So it is a challenge, because sometimes we rely a lot on those sensors and switches and such, which we need to. That's what keeps things going. But to understand the mechanics of how it operates is the real secret. So I think these schools do a wonderful job. I think the young folks that come out of the school have a good general based knowledge point, and then it's a matter of getting the experience, and that's where we come into play, where we have, you know, people fresh out of school. We kind of run them through a process to kind of build their experience level and their confidence, you know, having the confidence to fix a car sometimes is the biggest point.
Yeah, for sure. Back to the text line. What are the options for rust proofing or undercoating my 2023 Jeep Wrangler, or is that even still necessary anymore?
Well, there's a lot of products out there, and I'm not going to speak for or against them. I don't know enough about them, to be honest, but my opinion's always been wash the vehicle. You know, in the winter months, on the right day, you'll see that line around the block at the car wash. Unfortunately, from time to time, you might need to sit in that line. Pay the extra dollar or two to have the undercarriage sprayed down to get that salt and grime off of it. You'd have to check with those companies that offer that undercoating. I personally don't think I would do it, because I like to keep my truck clean. So if you're in the same mindset as me, I think it'll be just fine. Other folks have different opinions, which is just fine. But just do your research. Talk to your friends, your neighbors. Get referrals. Don't just listen to what the salesman's talking to you about. Get another opinion.
Yeah, we don't really think about the bottom of our vehicles, do we? It's just, let's keep it shiny and pretty and bright while we're cruising around. But who cares about the bottom, because you can't see it.
Right, out of sight, out of mind, right?
Yeah.
And it's important, though. Like I mentioned, and, you know, Danny, I used to talk about, because he was a fanatic about keeping his car clean.
Yep.
If you run through the automated car wash, which is what we all do, from time to time, spend the extra dollar to have them spray the undercoat or the underbody, just to get all that stuff off of there, you know, keep the rust from happening. It does make a difference. We see the bottom sides of cars all day long, all year round, and you can tell the difference over a period of time where somebody hasn't done much of that, and the rust is significantly more.
Yeah, good to know. And some of those car washes, including the one I go to, sometimes they'll have a day of the week where it's a little cheaper, but you can get the works, but still pay for just kind of the basic wash. So that's something to keep an eye out as well. One more question from the text line. Nick, what do you think about lift kits for a Chrysler Pacifica all-wheel drive to increase ground clearance?
There are a lot of aftermarket shops in town that do fabrications, enhancements, all that stuff. Personally, we try to put cars back the way that they came. We're not much into that aftermarket, high performance, lift kits, that stuff, because we just don't do enough of it. So I would, the old question and answer there would be, I would, you know, look online, do your research. When you start lifting the vehicle, you start changing some of the geometry, the angles, the steering suspension. There's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot more thought that goes into it than just putting a part in. So I would caution you to do a lot of research, ask a lot of questions. But that's typically stuff we don't get into. We try to put them back the way they came when they were new.
Yep, good advice. All righty, it is 7:44 on WCCO. That's all the time we have for you today, Nick. Thank you so much for all of your expertise. I hope you have a great time today if you guys do end up going to the Back to the 50s, and we'll chat next week.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. See you soon. All right, coming up, we have our weekly wine chat with Ted Farrell from Haskell's. Stay with us on CCO.